normally. How's Milwaukee?
It's a land of large people.
Be careful what you say.
Cheese-fed beer people. We went to a place last night. It was like a dive bar looking place.
Yeah.
It had like the best food I've ever.
Really?
It was like great. It was like
I love that place.
Milwaukee?
I love it.
All right, it's cool. Like it's very Midwest. Everybody's super friendly.
Yeah.
Is at this dive bar we went to. I went with Daniel Kramer and Tim Hebley, uh-huh. And they had like ahi tuna steaks with like these fancy things. I had a pork chop, a double. Of course, you know, you could get 1 8-ounce pork chop, or would you get two? So I got two.
Two.
With like this mushroom.
We're all adults here.
Yeah, it's a pork chop cooked by people in Milwaukee. So it was like with mushroom and onions and all the stuff on top of it. And then you could get the potato pancakes. So like they're just little pancakes of hash browns deep fried.
I know what they are.
I was so happy.
So good.
I was just like, and it was the best part was like they put my plate down and Tim and Daniel only got like the 8-ounce tuna steaks. And they're like looking at my plate. They're like, you did it right.
Okay, so time out though. I don't know. I kind of have a theory about this kind of stuff. Where I tend to like that type of fish. I'm not so clear on landlocked towns and cities and states. I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm getting tuna in Milwaukee.
I know. Well, maybe it swims in one of the Great Lakes or something. I don't know. It's just like it looked really good, honestly.
Yeah.
I went with the pork chop and it was outstanding. Oh, man.
So when you do the pancake, right? Mm-hmm. When you do that, do you go, this is very, well, like, well, is it Jewish culture that does this?
Yeah.
Do you put applesauce?
Yeah.
Do you put applesauce and like sour cream on it? Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I put some ketchup on there, I think, but it was good. I don't really even need that. I mean, cause it's basically just like a hash brown. I love hash browns.
Oh,
like hash browns are an underrated thing. Like when you have dinner and you can get a steak with hash browns, it's a big deal in Montana.
Is it really?
Like there's this bar in Big Sandy, Montana, where Jeff Ament was born. But you go there, it's called The Mint.
Uh-huh.
There's always I've heard of that. Yeah. And they've got a prime rib special on Friday nights. And
you can get
hash browns is one of them. And they bring a separate plate because they put so much fried hash browns and it's like fried extra crispy. It's amazing.
Okay. So
and it's all for like $26. Massive. Queen cut prime ribs, 14, 16 ounces, hash browns.
So
I mean, they bring you a salad. I pretty much just leave it on the table. But
salad, that's like swimming in blue cheese.
Blue cheese or ranch, you know.
Hey, I haven't been to Missoula in a while. Well, actually, I drove through there last summer, but I didn't go by. Is the ox still there? Are we still serving the chicken fried steak?
Yeah, okay. It's still there.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
It's that place is only good if you're drunk. I mean, like, honestly, you go in there.
That's a fair point.
It looks like there's a bunch of carnies sitting at the main bar.
What do you got against carnies? They're people, well, too.
Small hands, smell like cabbage, you know, circus folk, nomads.
Yeah, they are. All right, Ryan Divish, where is Ryan Divish? First episode of the Ryan Divish Show brought to you by Chalet Bowl. And again, Washington's oldest operating bowling alley, established in 1941. It's located in the beautiful, and I mean beautiful, Proctor District in Tacoma. Family owned and operated for 40 years by the Frederick family. They specialize in customer service for your bowling, food, and fun experience while at one of their unique 12-lane facilities or at their 12-lane unique facility. Go to chaletbowl.com to make your next reservations. Reggie, next time I won't butcher that read. That was terrible. The episode one, you were at a YMCA in Tacoma with wheelchairs and old people behind you. That was one. Episode two, you were at a pilot truck stop in Ellensburg.
Yeah,
episode
just outside the Arby's that was built into the pilot truck stop.
Episode three, we find you where?
Downtown Marriott in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay, and so how is the downtown Marriott treating you?
It's great. It's a little older hotel, but they're super friendly. They got the concierge lounge, you know, with the free breakfast and everything, free happy hour. Like I said, Milwaukee's a cool city. It's not, you know, I don't come here a lot. I'm just very thankful that they have a roof because it's like 37 degrees outside. And yesterday it was raining and the wind was blowing. It was miserably cold, but they have a roof. So, and there's a place, Puckett, that I sent, like, I have like a Yelp list of some places here. And we were going to go to this place that specializes in bratwurst and sausages. But then, as the astute young Daniel Kramer pointed out, it stays open until 2 a.m. So why would we go early when we go late?
I did that trip last year, driving back, but my son and I go do like a sports trip. So we went to go watch the Cougs play Wisconsin. Then we saw a Cubs game. We went to Field of Dreams, and then we went to a Brewers game. That is a great park. It's awesome. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, it's all the bells and whistles and stuff, but like for kids and for families, like that's the best thing in the world. Like, they have so many batting cages on that main level. It's insane. It's like going to a Funplex or like a D-Bats, if people know what that is. It is, and you don't even have to watch the game. You don't even know there's a game going on. And then they serve, I think they're one of the, I don't know if they're one of the last parks. I don't even know if T-Mobile still does this. They serve their soft serve ice cream in the little mini helmets still.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So, but I have a picture. I will share with you this picture of how much ice cream they give you, because everything in the Midwest is bigger. This thing is like $5 or $6. It is overflowing. It's so much ice cream. You don't even know what to do with yourself. Yeah, it's a great ballpark. And I was telling people on the Daily Puck Drop that when you stay downtown, all the bars, go check this out. All the bars have these like the mini buses, like the short buses, the little old like elementary school short buses. And they've painted them all up like the colors of the bar. And all you have to do is go to the bar, buy one drink, and they will take you to the game. And they bring you back. And they have their own designated lane into Miller Park. So you never have to wait. There's no traffic.
That's what the bar that I used to work at in Missoula, they have school buses that take you to the game and back. They do a morning tailgate at Red's Bar. And then you get on a school bus. You pay like $10.
Yeah.
And they drive you straight to the game. And they have a private tailgate. And they drive you back.
It's phenomenal. It's like it's just one of the greatest sports cities that we have. And I have a buddy, I'm not going to name him because if he listens and then his wife listens, then he'll be aired out. He would say that he loved going to Milwaukee because he'd go there on business, because he's like the women are just the perfect. They're that sorority girl that's just about 15 pounds overweight and lacking just a little bit of self-confidence. But down to have a fun time. So
drink you under the table.
Oh, they will.
Pounding Miller Lights and Leinen Kugels. Oh, summer shandies.
Love their Miller Lights. They love their – they just like having – Midwest people just like having a good time.
If you go to Madison, Wisconsin, it's one of the coolest places ever.
That's a great spot. There was one small regret when we went out there. Was not
took your kid.
Not I took my kid. Because the game gets over and Coug fans are just everywhere. We won. They're all at the bars and they're getting after it. And I'm having a couple afterwards before we got to go back to the hotel. I'm thinking I could really run this till about 2 or 3 in the morning. Really could do it. I ask, how long can a kid here stay in a bar?
He's your designated driver.
He could. He could probably drive. All right. Enough horsing around. Divish is in a hotel room in Milwaukee. Brewers and M start their series coming up on Friday. Well, I mean, you tell me, first 7 games, what do you think of this baseball team so far?
I mean, like, it was bad baseball. I don't think that makes them look like a shitty team or anything. They just play bad baseball. I mean, like,
that's the first swear word I believe on this.
Yeah, I mean, like, how it wasn't an F-bomb is a miracle, honestly, because
I love it.
Yeah, we went to this after we ate last night. We went to this bar, this Irish pub in downtown Milwaukee, and then we got like this huge homemade pretzel too, because God knows we didn't eat enough. And I'm just pounding Jameson, and all F bombs are flowing. And sometimes I forget how much I drop that word.
Yeah.
But if this seven game stretch of some errors and some strikeouts happens in mid-June, do people freak out as much? Yeah, they're pissed. And there's a segment of Twitter that people freak out regardless. But I think because it's the first 7 games and that's all you have, and everybody watches like the first few games of the season because they're excited. You know,
yeah,
once your life begins, then it, like baseball, which is the beauty of it all. It's the background of your life. It's the background of your summer. You put it on and, you know, it's, you look at it, it's errors, it's strikeouts, it's subpar starting pitching performances. Well, what are you most concerned of? Like, do we really think that George Kirby is going to be bad this season? No, he had a clunker, and those shouldn't have, those, that shouldn't have been 8 earned runs. I mean, like, right. Holy criminy. I went back and watched those errors. Those are errors. The one on Polanco, that's an error, and it led to 3 runs. And,
do you
like,
know why?
Technically, like, a pass ball is an error.
Yeah.
But that was that's the MLB scoring now. Everything's a hit. And apparently, okay. though, one of them went back and got changed again. So they're not – he didn't get 8 earned runs.
Okay.
But, like, so we don't believe Kirby's bad. I mean, Castillo, yeah, it wasn't great. But, like, the first 2 innings of each of those starts, he was good. And they just kind of caught up with him. And then, like, the errors – I mean, the guys that made the errors were the guys he said – we've said aren't very good at defense.
Yeah.
So, I mean – and then the strikeouts. I mean, I think the product of the strikeouts is that they're just not getting – like, everybody thinks it's just, like – there are bad strikeouts and there are good strikeouts. Like, obviously the result of a strikeout is bad, but like if it's a competitive at bat and the guy, you know, you're 7 pitches in and the guy executes a pitch and, you know, he beats you, that's fine. But a lot of the at bats, they were beating themselves by swinging at breaking stuff out of the zone or missing the fastballs early in the count that led to being down 2 strikes and getting breaking balls out of the zone. So I don't, if the weaknesses that you saw were just apparent, that's fine. And I think that's why I look at it as like, well, you know, we knew they're susceptible to breaking balls. We knew they weren't going to be solid defensively. All those things you can kind of improve upon. And then I just don't think the pitching is going to be that bad all the time.
What did you make though of the comments then from Jerry? I don't know if it was in your notes. I mean, it's a, you know, you guys, I think all talked to him, but your notes or in Jude's notes, where he talked about, well, hey, it's, we just faced a bunch of guys who throw a lot of spin.
Yeah.
And it will all even itself out. I mean, it's kind of an interesting comment and in how you look at it. It's like, well, other teams are going to see what they did against you and they're going to execute the same game plan. And it's, other than Bieber, not like you ran through a bunch of like great starting pitching. And they those guys still executed a game plan against you, which you struggled at a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, this isn't like a new game plan. It was a year ago, and it's a game plan for some other teams too. Like, a lot of people don't hit breaking pitches very well. Like everybody, it's funny. Like, so Daniel and Adam, they went and asked if they could talk to Jerry about the prospect stuff and where Cole Young was going to be and all this stuff. And then they just asked him a few questions about the first thing. And like, everybody's like, I saw a couple Twitter accounts like trying to parse every little detail that Jerry says and always like making first of all, Jerry doesn't seek us out. You have to go to, you know, we asked to talk to him. Like, he's not that excited to talk to us. And then like, you know, everybody's like, well, what does this mean? Well, yeah, everybody can say, let's throw breaking balls against the Mariners to beat him. But not everybody has like, yeah, a major league pitcher has breaking pitches, but like Emerson Hancock doesn't have a great breaking ball. You know, like, there's a lot of pitchers. That's why they beat Tristan McKenzie, is because his breaking ball wasn't exceptional. His fastball velocity's down. You know, Pivetta and Cutter Crawford, that's what they specialize in for the Red Sox. And so, same with Bieber. And those are the ones where they really got cut up.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, you go into the series, it's like, some of it is not – yeah, everybody can execute a breaking ball, but they can't execute it every pitch.
Right.
And that's the difference, you know. It's like recognizing the pitches and recognizing what you're trying to do at the plate. I think, you know, some guys just fall into it too. Like, everybody wants to get off to a strong start in the season, so they're hamped up and they're trying to do a little bit more. Just play. I think this, you know, now that they get out of town, they're 7 games in, just play, go out and play. And I think we'll see some improvement. And it's obviously a better hitting environment these next 2 series.
You sense though, I read into, you know, things so much and probably too much, right? It's a detriment, but you know, Scott Servais, he's asked that question, I don't know, was it 3 games in by Aaron Levine? And, you know, he obviously snapped and didn't like the question from Aaron. And I don't know what there's a history there between those two. I don't know. And so he's frustrated by that. And then after, I think it's the 6th or it was after the 7th game, you know, he's already, and I don't even think anyone asked him about it. It just unprompted, Scott Servais is like, well, you guys can all jump off the bandwagon if you don't want to be on here. It's like, we're 7 games in, man. Like, I don't, think anyone's jumping off the bandwagon yet. It leads me to believe these guys all say, we don't watch, we don't read, we don't listen. All of that's BS. All of it. I mean, how many times have you gone into, probably not, I don't know as much anymore, but when I was there, guys were reading the newspaper all the time. Like, yeah, all the time.
Now everybody's okay? Looking at their phones.
Now is everyone looking at their phones. He's came across to me as someone that's been listening to too much sports talk radio and watching some stuff and reading some stuff, because that was very weird, his reaction after that seventh game.
Yeah, it's different. I think there is some pressure. I mean, like, because they just – I think there's frustration because, like, for services, like, he saw – you know, granted, it's like spring training is different, but, like, he saw how everything could work when they do it right in those last 2 weeks of the season, and it was – impressive. And I think maybe he built up the expectations, hey, we're going to come out and do this right away, and it didn't happen. And I mean, I think also they place so much emphasis on the idea, like, hey, these games matter in April, and, like, you know, you miss by one game or two games, you know, you can't piss away games in April. So it's like, I think that's part of the frustration. Look, there is some animus, I think, between, you know, certain people who ask questions and certain people who don't, probably because I think sometimes the motives of certain people asking questions or the amount of time they're actually there gets called into question.
Right.
Whereas, like, you know, I ask stupid shit every day. So it's like, you know, he doesn't get mad. I mean, like, half the time I don't even ask questions. I just kind of make random statements like, Scott, not very good tonight, huh? And he'll be like, yeah.
Wait a minute. You mean the Greg Johns?
Yeah.
The Greg Johns move?
The Greg Johns. Greg, I love my boy Greg. I had it down for a while.
Hold on. You got to get the – he had the old for those listening, I'm going to demonstrate how Greg Johns, MLB.com. Where was he? Where was he before MLB.com? He's everywhere.
PI and then King County Journal, I think.
King County. So he'd have his notepad out like this for the viewers. I'm doing it, listeners. I'm just explaining the little notepad and then the old school
recorder,
and he'd be up there and skip a third inning.
And I mean,
but it was perfect because that's all they wanted to really be asked, and he'd get great answers out of it.
Oh, yeah. And everybody liked Greg because he was, like, fair. So it's like,
best.
So it's
best.
I think that's why we're seeing some of the responses. Like, at least, you know, it's like, it's a weird culture covering baseball. Mm-hmm. And players recognize who's around and who isn't all the time and everything else. But there's also some feel. It's like a little court awareness. Like, you don't go, like, if you don't ask questions, or if you're not around a lot and then you go in and start firing fastballs at guys' heads, they're going to get. And like I said, there's a past history. I mean, like, you know, we're talking about Aaron and there's, you know, he has a level of criticism that he likes to kind of work into the question. Like, the purpose for me, and I've said this all the time, was like, I'm not, like, looking to make a point when I ask a question. I'm looking to get an answer that I can put in my story. You know, and it's an answer that you put in your story is a lot different than a soundbite. And so it's
I understand, but it's a different culture, like Aaron, like TV or radio, as opposed to what you do and Kramer do, because he is, you know, and I just think there was nothing wrong with the question. I mean, I understand your point though. I think even Aaron in the TV side would understand it. It's, you will get something like that because if you are not there all the time, they get annoyed by it. And that's, you know, listen, that's for Aaron or any of the TV guys, you know, sometimes they just can't be there based on because they're doing the news. And so these are only the rare opportunities they get to go there. But you are looking for 10 seconds or five seconds. And
And like I've told Scott one time, like, because he said to me one time when he's like, why do you ask questions that you obviously know the answers to? I said, because it doesn't matter if I say it or if I write it. It matters if you say it. I can write why you didn't use a reliever, but or a decision, but you gotta say it because nobody necessarily believes me. And so it's like, I don't, you know, I guess getting into that, I was like, I mean, you know, if you you cut up somebody a lot on TV or in your stories, then when you go back in and you're not present all the time, and then you go back in, they're gonna, you know, they remember. I mean, these they're you know, it's like they might not read or read everything or watch everything on Twitter or whatever, and they all have burner Twitter accounts. But somebody in their family is going to tell them. I mean, like Scott Service's wife and his dad read everything. So it's like somebody's going to tell him.
Does he, though. I'm convinced that guy is
Scott's admitted he has a burner Twitter account. And so it's like, they know. But for me, I always just tell them, like, I'm not here to take cheap shots. And I'm not here to build myself up. And I think that's sometimes like people have ideas about other media, whether what their motivations are. For me, it's just like, you know, I'm a grouch who's just trying to make it through the day without punching somebody. So that's, you know.
And how is that going okay for you today on a Friday?
Yeah, usually just walls. And then when you break your right hand five times and your fingers don't go apart, you know, it's just you're kind of stuck.
Ryan Divish from a hotel room. Where in the world is Ryan? Episode one at a YMCA. Episode two at a pilot truck stop. Episode three is in a hotel room in Milwaukee. You're listening and watching at PuckSports.com. Also, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you find your podcast. His weekly appearance, well, he's on, I guess, bi-weekly appearance, Wednesdays and Fridays, brought to you by Chalet Bowl, Washington's oldest operating bowling alley, established in 1941. Get a reservation today at ChaletBowl.com. Sloppy play, you mentioned in the beginning. Addressing it, whether you spend more time working out, more time practicing? Is this just a thing that was kind of what happened? I mean, what do you make of that? Something that you saw, obviously, you noted that last visit there in spring training, but you think any extra emphasis is going to be placed on it here in the coming days?
Well, I don't know how much more. They'd probably do more pregame than anybody else in terms of ground ball work and you know, like outfield work, outfield drills. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these guys, I mean, like just Domkin's, like, and I think that's what's most glaring. And I was talking about this last night with Kramer, but like what's most glaring is like Jared Kelnick was an above average to elite left fielder. He made himself into that. You know, he's athletic. He attacked the ball. You know, he had a pretty good arm. Like he was fearless the way he played. Mm-hmm. Domkin's zone is never going to be that good. He's just not as athletic. You know, Rayleigh he's a more athletic. He could be better. You know, they're never going to have the throwing arm. And, you know, Suarez, who was an average third baseman, made himself above average with the help of Perry Hill and all their daily work. I just don't know that Josh Rojas and Luis Urias can ever close to that. And that's where the gap is. I mean, Rojas and Urias don't have the throwing arms, Suarez has a cannon for an arm, so he can make up for it. You know, I just don't know that they'll ever be that. I don't know that they can ever get to average at times. And, you know, you can do all the drills you want. Some people just aren't built to play the position. And I think that's why they're just trying to piece it together over there. I mean, you know, if they're in it towards the end of the season, you know, if they're at the trade deadline and that's still a glaring problem, that's one place they have to address, or they have to make a decision on what they want to do there.
It's crazy to see the numbers. I know as we're recording this and talking about this, the numbers are going to change. But when you look at the overall offensive numbers for the Mariners, and then you look at the three guys they had last year in Teoscar, Kelnick to a degree, and then Suarez. Really, it's about Teoscar and Suarez right now early in the season. I mean, these guys are just – I mean, they're playing great baseball, all of them. And, I mean, at that about a day ago, they had – more home runs and more RBIs than those guys, than the entire Mariners team. So, you know, defensively, offensively, it's just through seven games, it's just kind of been a mess for them.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're going to I think, like, Suarez, he did some work. I was reading some stuff. He's going to hit in that park, you know. And I think Kelnick, the one thing is nothing, you know, there are no expectations for him. You got Acuna, Olsen, you know, Riley. Like, he's just going to go out and play. And I think that's a big deal for him just to go out and play. So I haven't even looked to see how Marco's doing. I know that like the Pirates started off like 5-0. So
yeah. Well, in that play that I think he made Kelnick, I think in the second game of the season, that diving catch he made is just beautiful. Unbelievable.
And like that's the thing is like Jared is athletic, he's fearless, and he's worked at it because people criticized his defense. And that makes a huge difference. Like, you know, we've seen bad left field defensive play for a long time with the Mariners. And so, like, you know, that's an issue. And so I think I don't know that they'll ever be good, great defensively, but there's ways for them to improve. You know, and like I said, it'll get better. You know, it can't get worse, I would think.
Jude's got a piece up, and I want to end with this one on Cole Young, 20 years of age. He's going to be in Arkansas, Double A Arkansas. He's going to be one of the youngest players in that Texas league. Do you think there's a shot? I mean, DePoto mentioned it in that piece, Adam Jude, at Seattle Times. Is there a shot that he comes up in the summer?
I mean, it's possible. They rave about how mature his approach is. I mean, I like talking to him because he sounds a little bit like Spicoli. There's a lot of supers and bros and stuff like that.
Perfect. Wait, are you doing him now? Or are you?
No, so.
I didn't know if you were doing him now or you lost your train of thought.
Oh, I lost my train of thought.
Okay. Maybe you were out too late last night.
No.
Eating brats with Kramer and drinking beer. No. Okay.
So I think he's like, I compared his swing and his approach to like Michael Young of the Rangers, just how like he understands the strike zone. It's a simple swing. You know, it didn't have that weird toe tap, but it's just like I watched him this year and I was like, geez, this guy just understands the strike zone. And like his swing, when he fouls a pitch off, like he seems stunned that he doesn't hit it. And it's not like in a negative way, it's just like, oh, I should hit that, you know? So I think he's super advanced for where he is. I don't think he's a shortstop. But I think he's a second baseman. I think that's what everybody believes, that he could play second base. So, yeah, if there was something to happen to Polanco, you know, for a long-term period or even Rojas or something, could they bring him up and give him a look if he's playing well at Double-A? Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised he started in Double-A, honestly. I thought they would send him to Everett, have him play there for a month, and then, you know, move up. But apparently this was kind of always the plan. He's that advanced, and that – you know, and like he played a lot in spring training and he was really good. And so I think that, yeah, we could see him by the very end.
Well, it's going to be fun. I mean, he is, he kind of looks the part and it's great, kind of a write up on him. And I can't wait to see him. I mean, he just looks like he's going to be a hell of a ball player. Kind of love that. I love that, the comp there to Michael Young. That's a great one. Got it. Yeah,
I mean, like, people don't realize how good that guy was, you know? Because, Cole Young is not huge, you know? And it's like, he looks like a second baseman. It's funny, the draft comp was like a better version of Adam Frazier. And Frazier's like, what the hell, man? Like, better version of me? Like, till he gets to the big leagues, he's not a better version of me. You know?
I love a better version. That's wonderful. All right, we'll cut you loose. You be safe there in Milwaukee. Take it easy on yourself, all right? You're not a young man anymore, okay?
Well, believe me, like, you go out and kick it too hard till 2. Like, I'm paying for that 2 or 3 days later.
No, you can't do it, all right? You can't do it.
It's not even the headaches now. It's like my guts and, like, the other night I went out with Curto and got pizza. Yeah. Curto and Condota met Johnny Mack and Millis at this Hank's bar.
How's Johnny Mack doing?
Looking great. Good. Looking great. So we went to this bar in Tacoma called Hank's. They got great bar pizza. It's fantastic. But, you know, have a couple Miller Lights, eat basically a whole pizza, then have some Crown. I go to lay down. It's like Deho Lee was – I tweet out, it's like Deho Lee was standing on my chest. Like,
you're wondering
between
why?
The heartburn and the acid reflux, I was just like going to die.
Why can I not sleep? I don't know, an entire pizza, Miller Light and Crown. I'll probably do it for you.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, you know, back, it's not like the old days. So I couldn't go have JJ's, I couldn't have a chicken fried steak with JJ's gravy on top, you know, that spiciness, and then throw in some greasy hash browns. Like, they're just, you know, I got to live a little bit healthier. I won't, but I should.
You're looking great. All right, Ryan's appearances on Wednesdays and Fridays, all brought to you by Chalet Bowl. Big thanks to Reggie. Frederick and his family, Chalet Bowl, operating their oldest bowling alley in Washington, established in 1941. Get your reservations today at chaletbowl.com. Ryan, enjoy it. We'll talk next Wednesday, the Ryan Divis Show. We will have more content coming up later, pucksports.com. Until we talk to you again, as always, we promise to be better.
Shirts, no shoes, no dice.
Would anybody like to smoke some pot?
Yeah. I was born to love you. I was born. to lick your face. I was born to rub you, but you were born to rub me first.
What do you need my address for?
We'd like to send out a mailer.
Mother of mercy, I don't speak Japanese!